Good evening and welcome on the 1st of May. Just become the 1st of May. It's actually 3 a.m. in the morning for me. You're listening to The Marcus Allen Show on hoaxsyndicate.com. My name's Joel. And on the line via Skype is Marcus.
Hey, Joel. What's going on, dude?
I just rushed home from work. I know it was difficult to find a mutually agreeable time for both of us to chat. So I finished up my shift on the trains and ran home and then dealt with some audio headaches to get things running the way I expected. And we just had a little catch up in the pre-call, and I'm glad to be here and finally having our second call on my new network.
Great. And you should tell people what you do. I'm not exactly sure what you do when you say the trains. I'd love to hear a little 60-second description.
Okay, so the American audience would probably know it as a conductor. In Australia, mm-hmm. we have two people that run a train. So you've got the driver who sits in the cab at the front and just operates the driving controls, and you have what we call a guard that is usually located either in the middle compartment of the train or at the rear compartment of the train, and they're like a backup safety system to the driver. So they open and close the doors, make sure no passengers are stuck or anything. Because here's one interesting thing. A lot of people think that like train doors are like lifts and you just stick your arm in and they'll reopen, but they don't actually do that. Here we have 800 kpi pressure that just crushes you in the doors. So if no one notices that you're stuck there, you might be coming for a ride on the outside of the train. So my job is to check all the doorways are clear. And then once I shut the doors, I can activate the ability for the driver to power the train. So I actually inhibit them from powering the train when I've got the doors open. And I'm also like a backup safety system in the sense that I can apply emergency brakes if the driver becomes incapacitated and things like that. I'm qualified in all the railway operations, the way all the network and signals and everything work. I'm qualified at the same level as the driver. I just haven't been trained to actually drive the train. I'm a safety system for passengers. And you actually act as the sort of liaison between the people that run the rail network and the customer. So if there's a customer problem or an injury or some sort of sickness, anything like that, you're escalating the issue up. And you're also, when they want to make changes to the run or hold you somewhere, operations get in charge, and then you then pass that on to the customers. So you're like an intermediary on the train. So that's right. That's my 9 to 5 or, 5 to 2 as the case may be.
Did you ever screw with people who are like rude to you?
Oh, I don't know how much I want to say publicly. Look, ultimately, here's the thing, right? The driver pulls up at a stop. As soon as I see the brake pressure rise and I know he's got the brakes on, I can open the doors and take power away from the driver. Once I'm satisfied that we're all good to go, I close the doors, ready to go, and give power back to the driver. The driver does not give a shit about time or anything, right? They just want to hear a bell. They're like Pavlovian dogs, right? They just hear a bell that I give them and they drive. They're not paying attention to the timetable or anything. It's not their concern. That's my job, to keep track of where we are. So it can be at my discretion if I want to reopen the doors and let someone on or close the doors on someone. So I get that power every day to make those determinations. Not such a great power to have when there's no one riding around because of the coronavirus, but in normal peak hour things, it was fun. To sort of be in that position where you get to decide, if someone is rude and that, well, then they're not getting on, are you? Shut the doors and go and say, see you later. But there are people that are really polite and they're late for their train. You're already shutting the doors and they don't run. They just sort of stand there. And the ones that don't try to jam their, handbag or whatever in the door, which frustrates me. I'll reopen and let them on. So that's the weight I throw around on a daily basis.
Is there like official policy on what you should do about that?
Oh, probably somewhere. But it's one of those things, you go through, 8 months of training, and then the reality is once you actually get out there, all the rule books go out the window. Like, obviously you're supposed to stay up on the rules, but day to day you can't stay abreast of every rule and every procedure. So it's more of a casual thing when you're out there. It's just common sense, most of it. Generally you're allowed to shut the doors in people's faces as long as they're not caught in the doors. That would be a very dangerous thing to do. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, the funniest thing I've seen was someone, I was closing the doors, someone ran up and thought they could stop the doors by sticking their water bottle in. But it was one of these pump, you know, the pump water bottles with the pop cap on the top. So they stuck the water bottle in the door, the doors pinched the water bottle, crushed it, and it squirted them in the face. And I just thought, fantastic. I'd never seen it happen so perfectly. It was angled just right, and it just squirted. Just very clear jet just went straight out in their face. And I thought, that couldn't have happened better.
I'm assuming it's a plastic water bottle because I've got exactly what you're talking about. Here we go. I got the pop one, but it's glass. I don't think the glass would have done that.
I couldn't have done a better sound effect.
I can do it again if you want.
No, it was just one of those disposable ones, you know, like a, just like a pet bottle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here in the States, they're just plastic bottles with little tops on the top. I know exactly what you're talking about. That.
Anyway, so yeah, that's my regular job, and I usually take night shifts. I'm a bit of a night owl. I like being up at night. And if I had to do really early mornings, like 3 or 4 a.m., I would be late every day. I just hate getting up early in the morning. So I prefer to sort of wake up in the afternoon when I get my lazy ass out of bed and then just head off to work and sort of ride the night out. I always have my thermos full of coffee and just cruise around at night. It's a lot more relaxing. No stress.
Man, you just reminded me we need to do a show about coffee and how bad coffee is. Oh, I know you don't want to hear that.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, yeah. I know. It people are so addicted to it. I was addicted to it, I admit it, but it is so bad. There's a book called Caffeine Blues. I'll put that in the notes, Caffeine Blues. And, oh, my goodness, if you stop coffee for, like, 2 weeks, you will never go back to coffee. Guarantee it.
I wouldn't be surprised by that. I would expect, you know, that it's something you can get over, but I've given up so many other things in an effort to make myself healthier. Like, for a long time, I was consuming a lot of conspiracy content since I first got into this stuff, but I wasn't making changes to my own life. I was still eating poorly, and I really hadn't had the self-control to start living a better life. Mm-hmm. So I've taken advice from different people. An ounce of salt per day made me reconsider salt, and I now consider it important to have salt in your diet, and I make a concerted effort to have plenty of salt and stay sort of hydrated on salt. Like, I'll drink salt water, but I believe you don't have to keep drinking water when you drink salt water. It actually keeps all your electrolytes and everything in balance. So I do that. Listening to some of your old material from the, you know, 2008, 2009 era, I've experimented with just meat diets. So I stick to just proteins, get rid of carbs. So I've done that on and off. I'm sort of lazy with that. Like, I'll still eat bread occasionally, but for the most part, I just like beans and red meat, just sort of proteins, and that's what I stick to. What else? Oh, there's a member of John LeBon's site come along, and he's all on about fasting and how great fasting is. So I started experimenting with fasting. So I've done big, long 10-day fast, nothing but salt water for 10 days straight. So
wow.
These are all things I've tried. That actually resets your system too. Just incidentally, I'll mention that it does reset your system. Then it totally changes your perception of food. You don't feel this, like, that a fasting thing they say is you're only ever hungry after you eat, and it's sort of playing in that idea that, you know, you eat and then a few hours later you're going to feel hungry again because you've just digested what you ate. So I actually sort of reset my system with these really long fasts that I did, a couple of them, and then now I'm more like a one meal a day person. I only really eat one meal a day. So things like that. Oh, and not to mention, it's been about 8 months since I gave up alcohol completely. I guess I was an alcoholic. Like, I mean, it's so...
I guess...
Well, see, it's one of those things people define differently. Like, see, I would never drink on a daily basis. I could go the weekdays, like before I worked in the railways and it was a prerequisite to be sober. When I was working in radio, I could go the weekdays without drinking. But come the weekend, it'd be party time and I would always write myself off. It would be, you know, insane binge level amounts of alcohol on a weekend. And so that you could qualify that as an alcoholic. But, you know, I have family members who would flat out deny and be offended if you said they were an alcoholic, but they consume, you know, a bottle of champagne every night. And it's like they're drawing this line that, oh, I don't binge drink. I just have champagne each night. That's okay. You know, it's like so really at the end of the day, I think anyone, if you've even got to question it, you're probably an alcoholic. So I don't like assigning that label to myself. But I guess that was a problem for me. And I'm not saying I won't drink again, but yeah, I've given it up for the last 8 months. And I'm at the point where I'm like, I gave up smoking like full time as well. I started vaping as a substitute for that. So there's been so many things I've given up. The fact that you might say no more coffee, that's scary. Like,
wow.
That's the one thing I have left is like my coffee.
Right.
You're going to take it away from me, Marcus.
Oh, no. I don't tell anyone what to do. I just tell the experiments that I've done and what works and what doesn't work for me. And you can take it from there. I can tell you this. I'm going to get a little graphic, but do you know what ulcerative colitis is? Have you heard me talk about that?
I've heard you mention that you have it. And I think I know where you're going and why it's going to be graphic.
Yeah, because when you go to poop, you're bleeding, like, and it's uncontrollable. And I'm looking at I have a wall. I don't think I ever sent you a picture of my wall, but it has 4x6 index cards on it. And anytime I have a major discovery or a fix or there's a bad person in my life, I put the date down and what it is. And there it is. It's somewhere on here. September 23rd, 2019. And I had no idea what was causing this. Why is it that every time I go to the bathroom, I would bleed so bad that, and I don't go to hospitals or doctors, that I probably should have. I mean, I literally needed a blood transfusion. That's how much came out. And it was obviously something I was eating, and I, you know, tried to narrow it down. And then I stuck to coffee because coffee made me full. Like, I would drink coffee as a meal replacement. Just cream and sugar. And then I got rid of the cream and then I just put milk in it. Then I tried all different things, but it was the damn coffee. Because as soon as I stopped taking the coffee, I have not had an episode since, not a single one.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read Caffeine Blues, it lists all the things that you would never dream are associated with the detrimental effects of coffee. And the main reason why it's detrimental, number one, has oxalates, which are plant poisons, so it defends itself from being eaten. But even worse than that is it's the most sprayed pesticide, herbicide out of all the plants on the planet. Think about that.
You're saying the coffee beans are the most sprayed?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah, the more you say things like that, I think maybe it's something I should give up for a couple of weeks and see how I feel about
it.
Because coffee is one of those, for me, it's one of those double-ended things. Like, it's not just the coffee, it's the sugar as well, isn't it? Like, it's also feeding the sugar addiction because I have sugar in my coffee. So
I have more sugar in that coffee than the damn coffee. Okay. Coffee's disgusting. It's bitter. And the reason it's bitter is because it doesn't want to be eaten. Anything that's bitter is that way.
What type of coffee do you have in America, though? That's what I'm curious
Starbucks.
About. Okay. See, yeah, I don't find the coffee. I'll have two sugars. That's like 2 teaspoons of sugar. That's not a whole lot. That's just your standard instant coffee. I'm not a big fan of buying barista coffee. I used to be. Mm-hmm. All through my career in radio, it would be morning ritual was to get the team together and walk down and buy coffee. And then at other office jobs, I kept doing that. And then when I joined the railways, I kept doing that. And then it got to the point where I just said, what, like, I'm always fumbling around for, you know, loose change to spend on coffee. And I used to just buy it with a, you know, tap and go. And then it was transitioning to trying to have the coins on me to buy the coffee that started making me realize how much I was spending every day coughing up $3.50 for a coffee. And then maybe one in the afternoon, another $3.50. I'm like, I don't really need to be doing that. I've got an enormous amount of instant coffee at home and it's a decent brand. Like, I'm not that fussy over it needing to be a barista one. So, my mum had said, what do you want for Christmas? And I said, like, I don't need anything. And she always goes, well, it's Christmas, you know. It's not about what you need. What do you want? What do you really want? And I had no idea. I'm just like, I'm not the type of person that likes to receive gifts. I just said, look, I don't need anything. But then the thought hit me about a week later. I thought, oh, I could get a thermos. So I rang her up and said, look, I want to get a thermos, but it's got to be a good one, so I want to pick it. She said, yeah, no worries. So I picked out a really good brand of thermos, and then the plan was in action. From now on, I was going to make coffee, take it to work, save all the money. And that's worked out perfectly. Like, the amount already in the last few months I wouldn't have spent, which is probably ridiculous, you know. So it's just, yeah, with so much stuff I've given up, and it's not, I'm not saying you've got to give up to be healthy, but just, you know, I think giving up alcohol, trying this red meat thing, experimenting with fasting, they're all things that I've given up that's actually made a vast improvement to my life. So maybe coffee is one that I need to visit the idea of.
I would almost bet that giving up coffee is better than all the other things that you've done for your health. Like, I would go back to smoking way faster than I would.
I would too. John Le Bon has said many a time, and I think he's done a bit of the legwork on where's all the proof that you actually die from lung cancer from smoking. And I think that's probably true. Like, I mean, if you believe sort of the campfire wisdom thing, I mean, tobacco has supposedly been smoked for hundreds of years by people. So I'm not entirely convinced that you smoke cigarettes and then drop dead of lung cancer. I mean, I think anything in moderation is okay. And yes, I think for long term, like longevity, I would be better off smoking. I enjoy. You'd be surprised the amount of good conversations you have with smokers, because they're the type of people that take 10 minutes out here and there to relax and think about stuff. And I find there's a great social component to smoking as well. But I don't think giving up alcohol is probably the most significant, because it's taken 8 months and I didn't realize the journey would be this long. I thought it'd be something I started to feel the effects of within a few months. But like, it's only the last few months where I've really got motivated on this hoax syndicate project, and I've started to hang out on fakeologist audio calls, and I found sort of my wit returning and that, like, things that I just felt I didn't, like, I used to be really drunk and be crass just because I was drunk. But I find now it's taken 8 months to push through the sobriety, and there's a whole new level of intelligent wit and thought that I'm having that just wasn't there. Like, I was just numbing that. That's how I feel. I don't know if, you know, other people that have listened to what I have to say would say the same thing, but that's how I feel. Like, I've got this sharpness and clarity that's there in my life now, which is good.
Yeah, hopefully you don't go all Joe Rogan on me and tell me that you think weed's going to be good for you.
Okay, so weed's a complicated one. I think, and believe me, I used to smoke a shitload of weed. I'm surprised I'm still as mentally sharp as I am. I think weed is good in small doses. And like I say, I'm in a career where it's not an option. It's just, you know, you could be drug tested at any time. It's just something I can't do anymore. But I've got to say, there have been times when it's brought some things into clarity that you just, things that were right in front of your face, and especially in terms of conspiracy stuff and waking up, there are things that just, you just couldn't possibly imagine. Then that just, in an instant, just you went, oh my God, it's so obvious, you know. So it has had those good moments for me where it actually helps you to see through the veil. But I think for most people, it's something that you do every day after work, and you sit around, you watch YouTube videos, you're demotivated. It can be really toxic if you don't know how to control it, you know.
Right. So that gets you into talking about the zone. How do you get in the zone? I was actually going to write a book about this, but more important things came up with this coronavirus. But one of the guaranteed ways I get into the zone every single time, no doubt about it, and I'm married, so I can do this, is to have my wife give me a shower. No joke. If she rubs the shampoo in my hair and the conditioner and combs my hair and takes care of me, you have no idea how much in the zone I am in the shower.
Takes care of you. I only wish that. Rub something else as well, or are we just talking about hygiene?
Well, I'm married. I'm married. That doesn't happen.
Right. Okay.
Take care of grooming me, giving me a shave, my neck shaved. It's all that. It's like 45 minutes goes and I didn't even know a minute went away. Mm. And I get a ton of thinking stuff done. It's amazing. Same thing with a car ride. Take a little car ride. Does the same thing. Sometimes when I exercise. So none of it requires weed for me to get in that zone. Never tried weed, by the way, so maybe I'm missing out, but I doubt it. I mean, I see how dopey people get. It just blows my mind that people think they're at a higher spiritual level when if they should only videotape them, turn their camera to videotape themselves when they're on weed. I don't think they'd come to that conclusion.
I guess you're right. It's hard for you to say if you've never tried it, but I just say there have been experiences I've had that felt transcendent. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in the more creative zone, it can help you sort of with your output and help you join, like joke writing, for example. Like a lot of that's like a pun, right? You're sort of joining two disparate things and finding the commonality to make the joke about. Sometimes weed, for me, has helped me sort of get past that. And you sort of, it all just comes, it's like you're channeling it from somewhere else. And you can sort of be funny or find things that you just wouldn't have thought of otherwise. But mm-hmm. I agree. I think it can really depend upon your mood and how often you use it. Because that's what I don't like about weed is that the reputation of stoners is there for a reason, because there are too many people that it's just a complete demotivator and they get nothing done, yet they have mm-hmm. the mental satisfaction of having done something, even if it's just sit on your ass and watch Netflix. And mm-hmm. I think that's why it can be a really bad thing. And I'm not surprised that it's becoming legal all around the world. Considering right. people need something to sort of pacify everyone and keep everyone at home these days watching Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like prohibition with alcohol. It's the not for you strategy.
I was trying to remember what the name you gave it was, and you mentioned that last week, the other fortnight, sorry, not for you strategy. I like that.
Yeah, or the scarcity method. So that, same thing with everything that has a legal age on it is, you want it more. So when I see the government now approving weed state by state here in the States, I know what the agenda is, and you're dope. That's why they call it dope. Someone's going to argue and say, it's not really dope. I've heard that. It's not really called dope, or it depends on the circumstance. Okay. Again, go take your phone and point it at yourself after you take it. You're a dope. You're dopey. Or maybe you're special and maybe it helps you. Whatever. It's not good. I would do it if I saw people who I admire doing it and recommending it to me. But no one I admire recommends it. And alcohol is like one of the most toxic poisons on planet Earth. Yet people drink it like there's no tomorrow. It's just mind-boggling to me.
Mm. The weird thing is when I used to drink, you would go to the local bottle shop, and it was disturbing. So that for two reasons, the amount of people that you would, if you sort of were the type of person that went at the same time each day, you would see all the same people there each day, which is like, mm-hmm. So I'm not the only one here who seems to have this problem. I think it's way downplayed how many people are getting inebriated each night. And not only that, but the types of people that you would see there, like the ones, like the mothers with the kids, and the kids carry mummy's vodka to the count. Like it's insane. Like I'd say most housewives, guys that are in the dead end career, it's just the way to numb the pain to get through another day. And that was the sad part of it. And this 8 months, it's actually depends how you look at it. It's actually a little longer than that. So I did 3 months. Then had one relapse on a weekend. I actually went to the local bottle shop, parked my car out front, and then sat in the car for a good hour, sitting there debating, whether I should drink or not. And I ended up convincing myself that I deserve it. I've got work to do. I've got a podcast to produce. It'll be more fun. It'll help me power through it all. And I took the plunge, and then the next day immediately regretted it. So that's when I committed to 6 months, and then now I've mm-hmm. got through the 6 months. I've just gone 2 months since that 6 months concluded. I've just been an additional 2 months sober without even the desire for alcohol, because If anything, just the fear of regret and shame and sort of the negative connotations that it will carry is what puts me off it, you know.
So for us in the States and elsewhere, what is a bottle shop? I've never heard that term. I'm assuming a bar.
No. Oh, okay. So we call them bottle shops. It's your off license, a place that sells alcohol, but it's just there to sell alcohol. They just sell bottles of alcohol.
We call it a liquor store.
Yeah, of course. I should have thought of that. So we call them bottle shops, but yeah, your liquor store. It's just a big supermarket full of alcohol. You don't drink it there. You take it home.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and there. Here's one thing I actually figured. This is my one claim to fame hoax. I mean, for a lot of hoaxes and conspiracies, I follow other people. I take other people's ideas, I synthesize and amalgamate and come up with my own picture of the world. But the one thing that I will take claim to fame for is the alcohol conspiracy.
Now, what's that?
Okay, I'm under the opinion that this whole idea that alcohol is produced and aged in barrels and wine is picked from grapes and stomped down with people's feet, and this whole thing around the way alcohol is made is a complete illusion. It's all marketing and labels. Mm-hmm. The reality is, I think it's no different to the way you get Coca-Cola syrup off a post-mix and just mix in soda water. I think all alcohol, no matter whether it's spirits, wines, beers, I think they're all just components of water, raw ethanol, and flavoring and colouring mixed, probably local. Because you look at the amount of bottle shops or liquor stores we have here in Australia, and some of the big chain ones, these places are fucking huge, right? And you've got like 10 bottles deep on these massive industrial shelves. And this is just one store you're in. You're looking at the amount they've got here, and you go, these things are spotted in every suburb of Australia, this same chain store. How on earth is Scotland really exporting all that amount of scotch just to even fill Australia, let alone the world? Like, it's got to be just the brand is just a patent on a particular flavor, you know, combination, and it's all made in some secret factory somewhere. That's what I suspect.
I that makes total sense. I like that. So you're saying that the supply is way too large to do this in a slow way.
Yeah, like even the aging in aging in barrels thing for whiskey.
Yeah.
I think that's all chemical aging or something, you know, or just an aged flavor bullshit, you know, solution.
Yeah.
And it's all made, you know, your typical just in time setup. Mm-hmm. It's all just arriving straight from where it needs to hit the shelf.
You should call it the alcohol Toyota conspiracy, because Toyota weren't they the ones who pioneered the just-in-time concept?
I wasn't aware of that. I didn't know you could do cars just in time.
Oh, that's the whole industry now is just in time.
Okay. Well, it should be. The amount of parking lots of unsold cars around the place, you know.
Now, there's like 2 days worth of inventory at any given time with all these assembly lines for making cars. It's like 2 days.
Mm.
If there's a supply disruption, the whole thing goes down.
Well, this is part of that technological future. What's the Zeitgeist guy you were talking about?
Jacques
Fresco, right? This is the kind of thing he was talking about. It's only, you know, the technology and the internet has developed to the point where we can actually do just in time. Like, it was so wasteful keeping stock of things in local environments. Like, I know all the supermarket chains do all the just in time stuff now. So there's no more stocking the shelves with equal amounts of shit and then just guessing what people are going to buy. Like, each night, the grocery store has one truck bring just the right amount of everything to restock what was sold that day, you know, coming from some distribution center. I think that's an incredible way to run a society. You know, that's how it should be, using technology for good. I know it benefits them for their, you know, capitalist purposes, but it's nice to think there's not the same kind of waste. You haven't got dumpsters out the back just with food being thrown out for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Except if you have a plandemic like we're experiencing now, and you can't get, literally you can't get toilet paper, literally still. It's been a month and a half or so, and I still cannot get toilet paper. anywhere.
Well, we'll save all the Corona conversation and toilet paper complaints for later, because I do have Corona on the agenda. But up next, I did want to speak to you about, I don't even know how to phrase it, like the recent alleged passing of your former co-host, Chris Kendall. And I'd like to speak about that after the break. We're just going to take a short break and we'll be back in a moment. This is Marcus Allen Show on Hoax Syndicate. Welcome back to the Marcus Allen Show on hoaxsyndicate.com or Hoax Syndicate Radio, just Hoax Syndicate, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. What do you think works better? Like, I like the idea of saying Hoax Syndicate Radio. Like, it sounds cool, but the brand is just Hoax Syndicate.
Yeah, I like the radio, Hoax Syndicate Radio, because I don't think, like, I understand we've talked about this before. I think it was privately. You know, where'd you come up with the idea of Hoax Syndicate? And to me, a syndicate is like crime syndicate. So I don't know if that's like here in the States, what we think of as syndicate.
No, I agree. That's part of why I went for it. I wanted to have that sort of edgy.
Okay.
What do you call it? Like.
Edgy. Yeah.
Yeah. It is edgy and underground and sort of like a drug cartel kind of vibe to it. Yeah, cartel would be another word, like hoax cartel.
Yeah.
That kind of thing is sort of what I wanted to sort of imply that this was outside the bounds of normal society. I think the word carries that. But yeah, it's one of those things. I could end up buying 1,000 domain names with all the different things I like the idea of. But at the end of the day, I just needed to pick something and just go with it and get it done. We can't debate this stuff all day. But look, if someone says, hey, you're listening to Hoax Syndicate Radio, big difference, you know, people get the idea.
Yeah, I'm not big into names. Like, you know, everyone's like, oh, a name is so important. Okay, what's a Google? What is Xerox? What does that mean to you? What does Chase Bank mean to you? The names are not really that important.
Well, yeah, but like some of these things, Twitter, like,
yeah,
like some of this stuff we just take for granted. We deal with it every day. Yet you don't really stop to think, what does that even mean? Like, where, like tweet, because you do tweets. What, like you like a bird? Like, is that? I know that's their logo, but it's like
or Facebook.
Sometimes it's like, did this stuff just happen accidentally, or is there some psychologist putting a lot of thought into these silly names?
No. Now, in the car industry, they use Masonic names and they say, oh, these naming labs came up with it and they did tests. And much like your alcohol conspiracy, I think that the name conspiracy is that. It has nothing to do with being tested. It's code. It's code that we don't understand. So I don't put much stock into names. I could care less.
Yeah, I see. It's funny because I started to pay a lot of attention to words. I've always knew words had these meanings, but the more I listen to people like Dave J, he goes on all the time about all the different meanings of words, and you know, you break it into a couple of different parts and you go, holy shit, I didn't realize it meant that. Like there's this stuff right in front of your face. If you actually pay attention to what you're saying verbally or how something's written, it can have this totally different meaning. And it's often right there. Like one example, it was the news, right? The north, east, west, and south. It gives you your direction, your compass. You know, that's what the news is. And it's like, I never even thought of it that way. But when you look at it, well, there you go. You got a compass right there.
Yeah, but that, and I've mentioned that many times in the past too, but that doesn't mean that's why they came up with the acronym news. You know, that's the thing about Dave J and all these people who add up numbers is you can take any number and turn it into something there's nothing there. I mean, yes. When you see at least 33 in the news all the time, I think at least is a code, and 33 is certainly a code. There's no doubt about it. But when you say, and Dave J likes to do this a lot, oh, if you take the 2 and the 4 plus 6 and then you divide it by 2 and then you look outside and it's the seventh day of the week, add 7. Now, you know, come on. It's like you can turn anything into anything. And it doesn't improve my life. The things that Dave J talks about does not improve my life. That's why I really don't put much stock into Dave J.
Yeah, it seems like sometimes there can be these sort of arbitrary jumps that just happen mid-explanation where you're like, wait a minute, I didn't catch that, and I think there was a reason I didn't catch it, you know?
Right, right.
just slip one into the net.
Am I taking notes that help improve my life? Am I like getting my notebook out and taking tons of notes? And with characters like Dave J, I don't at all. Never. I never do.
Well, while we're on the topic of Dave J, he's recently resurfaced at Fakeologist to combat some of the ideas being put out about some recent news about your old friend Chris Kendall. And you actually, after the alleged death of that character, you put out an article on your site. And I was wondering if you could fill us in a bit about your opinion on that. So I think this might be the first time you've spoken about it publicly.
Yes, I was asked by Tim at Fakeologist to do it, and I declined. And I said everything that I had to say is pretty much on this article. And let me copy this link, and I'll post it in the notes, the companion notes, right there. Yeah, so basically I wrote a, 1,500-word little thought about it. And you want me to just get to the punchline and then kind of go into detail about it?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, the punchline is I don't buy it. I don't buy the death at all. And a lot of people forget, they literally forget that Chris has had a history ever since we've known him for the last 8 or 9 years of pulling disappearing acts off, being on other, you know, creating other podcasts that sound exactly like him. In fact, when we were off recording, I asked you if you knew about this Bobby Show.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it.
So I'm going to post into our little Skype chat here so you can see for yourself. Let me pull this up here. And again, I'll post this in the notes. This is a YouTube channel of, it's called The 138 Show with Bobby and Bobby. And it was a incredibly hard show. It was about truth stuff. It was an incredibly hard show to understand and listen to. But one of the Bobbies in the show was 100% Chris Kendall, known as Bobby.
Right.
And this happened about 2 years, like 2 years ago, maybe. All I know is the whole thing with Annette character, we're really getting into, you really had to follow this stuff.
Inside really baseball, right?
Totally inside baseball. Where John Adams said that Annette Carry On, some famous person died, but there was a lot of proof that that was a hoax. And then we never heard from John again. The last time I spoke to Chris Kendall, which I think was on March 30th, which was his last show, actually. How ironic is that? He was mentioning that he talks to John. He admitted that he talks to John Adams weekly. So John is still alive and well, and he talks to him weekly. So anyway, so he's doing this weird truth show called The 138 Show. And I know it was Chris Kendall, because as soon as I heard this voice, I'm like, oh, that's Chris Kendall. But I didn't say anything. I said that to myself. My wife was downstairs with my son. And my wife yelled up something like, I thought you were done with Chris Kendall.
Oh, right.
And so, my son said the same thing.
So this 138 show with Bobby and Bobby has never said anything about Chris Kendall being involved. This is a completely different project where it's just someone named Bobby who you picked up was Chris Kendall.
Who my wife picked up was Chris Kendall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's a very good chance it was Chris Kendall from that evidence. But I'm just saying it was never publicly stated that this was the same person doing Hoaxbusters Call.
Not that I know, because it was so unlistenable to. And Chris was literally the character, one of the Bobbies, was literally saying the opposite things that Chris, literally everything was the opposite of what Chris from Hoaxbusters would say.
Right. Now, this 138 show from about 2 years ago, now that's within the time period that you were on the outs with Chris, because I think it was about five years ago when you had that last conversation when you brought up the electrical deaths in military bases.
The military, yeah.
So that's what initially started that falling out that lasted about 5 years. And
yes.
In the meantime, he's done this 138 show.
Yes.
It's funny, too, that if this 138 show, as you're saying, I'm just trying to lay it out as clearly as possible because, you know, in a conversation like this, we could jump around 100 topics and it could just become confusing for the listener. But sure. So around this time, you mentioned a net carry-on, right? Now, so if that's around the same time, that's another example of when Dave J showed up to shed light on that and point out that it was also a fraudulent claim.
Yeah.
It's interesting because Dave J's recent conclusion is what we're dealing with here is a whole cast of characters. You know, the whole Annette Carrion thing, Chris Kendall, it's all part of a small group of, you know, what do you call them, like actors or theatre, you know, people, whatever it is. We're dealing with a team coordinating this thing.
Sounds like Dave J might be part of that team, doesn't it?
Well, that's what's interesting because he said, if I recall correctly, in the thing, he did go on a rant about how these are all people that have been associated with the military and the Navy, no less, and you should know better as soon as they mention that and you've seen the photos, you would know to be suspicious of that. But then Dave J goes on to talk about his Navy career.
Right.
And that, so... And he did talk about it for a while too. Dave J's always used his Navy career as sort of supporting evidence for his claims about the war hoax.
Yeah.
Which ironically brings us all the way back to why Chris and you fell out in the first place. It's a weird quagmire of different information.
A lot of irony there.
Yeah. See, I've always – look, I don't really know what to make of Dave J. Part of me wants to believe that he is a guy who is a bit of a crusader and is going against his past in the military. He's a very believable guy. I think he is sort of spiritually true in what he says, and he sort of says what he wants to say with conviction, and he does call people out when they say things like that. But it's weird that the same guy would crop up twice for two events pertaining to this same group of people.
Out of the blue.
Hmm. Just yeah, you're really making me think about that now. It is good timing, isn't it?
Someone's got to do the cleanup. Someone's got to clean it up. So and give us our conclusions.
Excuse me.
We should talk about cults and religion after we get done with this segment.
So, man, I need a drink far out.
You could go back to alcohol.
I'm enjoying myself too much. No, I just need to wet the back of my throat. You know, you get that dry spot. Now it's just you can't recover until you have something to drink. Luckily, I did go during the break and refill my drink. I was told that when you give up alcohol, sugar will substitute it, and surely enough, it has. I find I have a sweet tooth for cordials and soft drinks.
That sounds delicious. Actually, a cordial.
I've got a.
I would like a cordial.
Yeah, I've got a lemon, lime, and bitters. It's very nice.
Mm. Mm. I miss pina coladas. I know that's a woman drink, but I do miss that. And my long. Did you know? Everyone knows me as the Long Island iced tea guy.
Yeah, I meant to ask when we were talking about alcohol. What? Tell me the backstory behind that. I hear the joke all the time. I know you drink the bloody things. I don't know if I'm. There's part of the joke I'm not getting.
No, it's not a joke. When I was in college, my roommate and I would make Long Island iced teas, and it was just because it was the quickest way to get drunk. It's like six different alcohols, and you get one of them, and it's game over. It's as simple as that. So I'm like, I used to be a scarcity-minded person, and during the little break there, we discussed how you like to save a lot of money, and I don't. I don't do that anymore. I used to. And I'm more of an abundance person, get a little new agey on you. And yeah, so when I was in college, Dave had no money and I had no friends. And I would have to pay for, if I wanted to go out, eat pizza and drink something with Dave, I'd have to buy. So the cheapest thing to buy was a Long Island iced tea because, like I said, one drink had six alcohols in it at once. One drink and you were roasted. And it was cheap.
If I remember correctly, too, the Long Island iced tea is the same equal parts of all the different alcohols. So it's not even a very complicated recipe. It's like, it's just slap every bottle on the shelf in there. And
Yeah, exactly. And I went to bartender school. I dropped out of bartender school on my graduation date, the last day of bartending school. And that's because we went to a real bar. I'll never forget this. And I witnessed how people were, for some reason I didn't, because I never went to bars really. And I only went to bartender school because I wanted to meet chicks. That was it. I didn't care about the money. I just wanted to meet girls. So I went to bartender school thinking I'd meet loose girls. And when I went to this bar on the last day, graduation day, I couldn't believe people were going in their cars and driving home completely blitzed. And I'm like, I'm not doing this. I literally have a certificate of graduation and I quit that same day.
Yeah, you're like an enabler then, aren't you?
Totally. And any bartender that, I love bartenders. They're like, that guy's an asshole. Why? Look how drunk he is. Well, didn't you serve it to him? It's like, what am I not getting here?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, we should circle back to it's good to finally understand what that's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, someday when I do go back to drinking again, we'll have to meet up for at your one of your new locations in your country. We'll meet up and we'll go to your bar for a Long Island iced tea.
I'm actually thinking about whether I should. We're talking about Project X. I go back and forth whether we should have alcohol on location. See, I'm going to have a private club so I can do anything I want. But it's like the coffee conversation. Like, do I serve coffee to our patrons if it's bad for them? They always say give what your customers want. But am I enabling them to get sick? I think about stuff like that. Mm. Anyway, that's for the next segment. I know we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, so we'll go back to Chris Kendall. So, you were going to give some broad strokes and then go into a bit of detail on the article you wrote.
Yeah. So the punchline is people have a short memory. I do not have a short memory. I remember a lot of stuff in my old age of 53 years old. And Chris would flee, would never apologize for fleeing. We all thought he died and then he'd come back. So is this just another one of those things where we think he dies and then he comes back? I sound like Trump there. Death, it comes back. So the thing that really did it for me, I'll link it in the companion notes. If you go to my article, the thing that is smoking gun, this is ridiculous. It's not proof, but it is ridiculous. In fact, do you know what I'm going to say? I know you read the article. What do you think I see is the most ridiculous part of the whole story?
Okay. Can I wager two different options?
Sure.
Either the part that the claim on Facebook changed from murdered, or the fact that his sister has created so many GoFundMes for so many different organizations since that was a thing.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. About the thing about him being from it being changed from murder to, my wife always has plausible explanations for things. And she said, well, maybe she found out that he wasn't murdered because she got the coroner's report after she wrote what she wrote on Facebook and changed it. And that's plausible. It's certainly plausible. I doubt it, but it's plausible. So, yes, what you said second is exactly the thing. Her sister has created over 700 GoFundMe accounts. In fact, my wife was like, hey, can we hire her? Because we could just create something and make people send us money for no reason.
Expert consultant. And that's the trait, though, isn't it, of all these hoax events is the GoFundMe for me has become synonymous with a fake event, give us your cash. That's the that's the thing now.
Now, what's the deal in Australia? If someone dies, do they do a GoFundMe?
Yes. Look, I'm not the best person to ask because I'm so socially removed from normal life. But I think if the ways of 5 years ago are anything to go by, I don't think that's something people do. People fund that privately. They don't reach out for everyone to give money when someone passes away. That does seem socially inappropriate.
Yet my son, a millennial, will say, oh, no, Dad, you're wrong. Everyone these days, whenever someone dies, they go right to GoFundMe and raise money. So this must be like a millennial thing.
It plays into the whole, oh, woe is me, Facebook fucking narcissistic society, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So we got that. What else? I'm looking here. Did you know that he died on the same date that Christ died?
I believe I heard someone mention that. I hadn't looked any more into it. But so this is over the Easter long weekend.
And died the same way Christ died. Fell off a ladder and somehow with a knife bled to death.
Okay, case closed.
That's what we're told. That's what the article said.
Yeah.
That I linked. Yeah. So here's the thing. Ever since 5 years ago, the way Chris kicked me off was very suspicious to me. And then I tried, like an abuser goes to an abuser, and tried to come back with this coronavirus thing. I really wanted to know. He's a sharp cat. And I wanted to know what he thought about it. So that was the second time I was on in the last 2 weeks, I think it was. The first time I came back 5 years, like the 14th. No, let's see, 30 minus 14, the 16th. I came back on April 16th, had a great conversation. He's like, so Marcus, are you going to call in once in a while? What are you going to do? And I'm like, I'll see. I thought everything was great. And then when I called in on the 30th and I told him about Project X, and I brought up Project X, I said, well, that's so funny that you're saying that, because he wanted to have, did you listen to the last one I did with him?
Yeah, yeah.
So he wanted to have a confab. Here in the States, a confab is where you just have an unorganized meeting amongst people. I said, well, Chris, you can't have that right now. It's not social distancing, and we were making fun of it. And I said, well, I would like to tell you about a project that I've been working on for over 20 years, and I'm going to make it happen because of COVID, because of coronavirus. And he actually made fun of me. He made fun of it. I don't think it's going to work, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. And then he also, if you remember, I said, I did a poll asking if people thought this was fake, if it was real or not sure. And then he goes, well, I'm going to mark down, I think it's real. Because, just because people say that something is this, they really don't mean that. They're lying on these polls. And I'm like, that's a really jerk off move to say that. It just seemed like he was ready for me when I was there. And he just unloaded on me. It's certainly not something that a friend would do. And so I can't say that. Go ahead.
So there was this element of him doing this sort of mocking of your idea. And that was sort of compounded by the fact that he'd say he would answer incorrectly on a poll, which on one level I can see what he's trying to do, or what he's trying, what his point is. But interestingly, that to me, looking at it from a more sinky perspective, or a preconditioning, or whatever you want to call it, that seems almost like he's warning you of a deception. He's making it quite blatant. Like this could have been preordained quite a while beforehand. So just as you were saying that, I was thinking that kind of is, for someone who's not known to say those kinds of things, it almost seems like he was already alluding to what was going to happen.
That sounds a bit like a leap to me, but maybe. I have no idea. All I know is nothing of this death passes the sniff test to me. Nothing. Nothing.
No. Well,
does anything for you?
Oh no! The more you talk about the relationship to Easter, it all starts to seem quite clear, doesn't it?
See, to me, the Easter thing is the least of the thing that's not so clear. To me, I mean, if you read his sister, this is like 9/11 memorial nonsense. Oh, he was such a great Christian, such a great brother. What do you mean he's a great brother? According to Chris, and I talked to him for more than anyone, he never talked to his family.
Yeah, I think you pointed that out in the article, that someone's first reaction isn't to go on Facebook and create a big emotional post with emojis and all the nonsense that goes along with it. It does seem kind of insincere.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe Easter's not the biggest thing, but sometimes with conspiracies like this, the more evidence just seems to pile up, the more obvious it seems, you know. Maybe I need to go smoke some weed to really find that clarity. But, I mean... Yeah, there's so much sort of here in your article you pointed out, and so many coincidences. They're just not coincidences anymore.
It just doesn't. I always say this. I'm like, you don't have to. If something's real, you don't have to fake it. If there's a car accident that I see outside, and I've seen car accidents, and then I've gone to the newspaper to see if they report it, and it's exactly how it happened. Like, this car plowed into a bank. I saw a car plow into the bank, our local bank. She was wearing flip-flops. I actually know the person. It's the owner of a pizza place. She had flip-flops on. She tried to hit the brake and accidentally hit the gas pedal. She crashed, literally crashed through the bank, saw it happen. And the newspaper reported it exactly how I saw it happen. There was not a single thing that was off. Not a single one. There was no GoFundMe. In fact, she was pissed. She wanted to sue the newspaper because they published her name, and they're like, why is my, she's like, why do they need to know my name? People were mad at me. Like, my customers were mad at me because I crashed through the bank. I don't want that. So all that just seemed completely real to me anytime I see something like that. But this, here's another thing I don't think I published. There were a couple of things I left out, like the whole Bobby thing. Like, I didn't put it in my article because I can't prove it. I can't prove it's Chris. And the Easter thing, like, the article didn't say that he impaled himself with a knife and a ladder. It's it's kind of inferred. There really aren't a lot of details. So I left that out. What was the other thing I was going to say? Oh. Why is Chris getting so much coverage in the newspaper? Like, I've talked about this before. My wife's mom died tragically. She got hit by a tractor trailer. Like, if anything was newsworthy and shocking, it would be that. There was not a single article about it. Zero.
Yeah. The local paper's running several articles on local man with a story that's not particularly interesting apart from the fact that, and this wasn't published, but he happened to have an internet radio show that was moderately successful.
Yeah.
Of people that were skeptical of this kind of event.
Right. And this is not the first time that Chris has been featured in newspaper. I don't know if you're aware of this, but he's been featured two or three times in the past because he was bipolar. That was in the newspaper. Really? I mean, come on. So
all my creative juices are flowing now that we've got so much more I want to ask you about this, but we need to just take a quick break. I think we'll continue the CK discussion after this. But you're listening to Marcus Allen on Hoax Syndicate. And we're back. This is the Marcus Allen Show on Hoax Syndicate, coming to you in my time zone, 4 a.m. on the 1st of May 2020. What time is it in your zone, Marcus?
2:32 in the afternoon, Thursday, April 30th, which means you can tell me what the lottery numbers are since you're ahead of me.
Yeah, okay. See, the thing is, I don't play the lottery. I don't really believe in it, but I appreciate the joke for what it was.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one of those things with multinational radio broadcasts. That's something people don't really do, is do the multi time zone announcements. Maybe we can pioneer that just to waste extra time.
I like that. Yeah, we should do that.
We were talking about Chris Kendall. Now, one thing I meant to go back over this. You were saying in the past about him disappearing a lot. I remember, because I've listened to all your back archives, I do remember a call where it was one of those occasions where he disappeared for like a month and he came back, and you were sort of doing one of your classic interrogations about, like, what it was about, why he did it, why he wasn't in touch, because, like, I wasn't around at the time. So I understand he was still sort of in email conversation and kept in touch with the group that were doing all the talk shows and that. Is that correct?
What, emailing us that he would be taking off?
No, like in some sort of behind-the-scenes communication week to week between shows, or that's not
Not most of the time. But then I think after I said something, then he started to do it. And it's possible that he really did need to just take off because he was in a bipolar moment. And he would always go back to San Diego. Always go back to San Diego.
Hmm.
By the way, we have police activity in front of my home right now.
Get the camera out. You might need to do some field reporting.
It's funny because there's a... it's so inside joke. It's going to a woman who is... I don't want... This is going out publicly, so I'm going to hold it. Oh, I want to tell you so bad, but he's at her house. I'll have to tell you off recording, then you'll let me know for next time. Maybe I can explain, I can describe what's going on. Anyway, let's get back to Chris, as I'm just totally distracted right now.
Go take a break. You can go stare out the window. You'd be like one of the Corona Dobberina people that sits there peering through the blinds, reporting their notice.
The way my microphone's set up is I have to be over here to see what's going on, and you're not going to be able to hear me, so I have to come back. So anyway, back to Chris Kendall. Yeah, so there was no, Chris wasn't one of those communication kind of guys. It was just like, in fact, I filled in for him for weeks and weeks and weeks at a time. Do you remember that part?
Yeah. See, I haven't listened to all the back catalog of Hoaxbusters. I've listened to all your calls, so I'm not too sure which is a crossover into which.
Yeah, yeah. So I used to fill in for him a lot because he would just disappear. And at one point I was like, well, do you want me to just come in if you're not there? And if I remember right, the answer was yes. But at that point I was not at all suspicious of him in any way. It was just, you know, it was just like, here's the deal. This is going to sound racist, but it's just true. I owned a business where I employed 15 to 20 Mexican workers that illegally crossed the border. I was in the advertising business and they worked for me. And about the 18th of December, year after year, none of them would show up. Have you heard me talk about this?
Something about this seems familiar, but... Is it something about green card time or there's something to this?
No, it was Christmas in Mexico. They went back to Mexico
for
3 weeks. But it's their culture. So what they do is then after the 3 weeks, all of a sudden I'm sitting here, I'm doing all the work, literally of 15 people, because my customers are screaming at me. And the first year I had no idea what was going on. And then they all showed up. And I'm like, where the fuck have you all been? I was pissed. And they're like, well, we're here to work. I'm like, but no, where were you? What, you've been gone for 3 weeks. And then finally, one guy who spoke more English said, oh, they went back to Mexico. They do this every year. Like, you need to tell me that. I need to either shut down or...
That's
what Chris did.
That's a little known fact for those of us outside the States. I thought illegal immigrants sort of came through the wall. And then they were just in America. I didn't realize they go back and come in again over and over. It's like a revolving door.
Okay. On airplanes. Yeah. This whole border thing is it's just for everyone to soak in. It's a lie.
Hmm.
So they literally went on airplanes and then they'd show up 3 weeks. So now I knew after that. And that's what I was like with Chris. I'm like, you know, you need to let me know because I care about you. I really did care about him. I'm like, I was really upset that I thought he died. And of course, when you're in the conspiracy realm, especially all the way back then, I thought they took him out. And maybe that's what we were supposed to think.
Right. So the what I'm taking from this is that maybe Chris was like partly Mexican and he had like his niece's quinceañera or something he had to go to.
He kind of does. I kind of look Mexican too. I guess we all do, but I have no idea what the scoop is. All I know is I was really upset and I laid into him.
Yeah, so more specifically about that call, I could tell that like you were upset about this whole thing, and I think from memory he sort of came back and laughed it off, like, why would you be so annoyed? Yeah. But I think you and other people on the call were kind of like, is this really an appropriate way to act for people that are used to – like I think from memory it was like he didn't really think you had that kind of friendship, but a lot of other people were more invested in what you were doing.
Yeah. I mean, I really I really thought they took him out, and I was worried. And of course, my wife is just freaking out because my wife now still thinks they're going to take me out, even though it's ridiculous. There's nothing to take me out for. They don't care what I say. They want me to say it. That's what I look at it. They want people to know that we live in this thing that we call life. So I'm not worried about that, but of course my wife is, and when that happened, she was upset. So that transferred to me. I was upset. There was a lot of upsetness going on, and that's it was a long time ago. Was it like 8 years that happened?
Yeah, that probably would have been around 2009-10, I think. It was long before the electrocution breakup, and
yeah.
So it's 10 years. Such a storied past with you lot.
I know.
So there's a character that has been around Fakeologist. He's a member of John Le Bon's site, and his most recent name he goes by ID Canspire. But he's had other names, other iterations of his characters. And he said something to me that I didn't really think about at the time, but it's sort of cropped up recently. I remembered it and started sort of applying it to what I'm seeing here. And that was that sort of like there's a timeline. Like if you look at the bigger picture of the world, I think this whole biblical sort of playing out of a story seems to be what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so he'd suggested that, look, there, and I guess that what we're saying here, or at least what I'm saying, is that Chris appears to be some sort of controlled asset who had an agenda to stick to. So what ID Canspire says is that, look, there's a timeline for this. And so what I would say is maybe this breakup over shower electrocutions is sort of because you were speaking out about the war hoax before it was due to be spoken out about, because John Le Bon came along and a couple of years ago started speaking about the war hoax, and people mm-hmm. were hesitant to engage at first, but after his persistence in putting out that content, it starts to be adopted by the community. You know, the alternative conspiracy truth realm starts to take this on board, and I think a lot of people's opinions now are, well, that's obvious. Yeah, war's a hoax. Like people just sort of go along with these new ideas, and it's like maybe what you were suggesting was just ahead of schedule. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I love the way you say schedule. I love the way you guys say that, schedule.
Seriously, my wife is very charmed
by it. There's also another thing which I've talked about in the past, I'll bring up again, which is that Chris Kendall was very upset with me because using Zaba Search, I recommend everyone go to ZabaSearch.com. Let me put that in the notes. Let me pull that up. Here we go. Zaba, ZabaSearch.com. If you put in anyone's address here in the United States or name, you can pretty much get their current address. It is remarkable and it's free. So I was getting a little suspicious of Chris. So I put his name, that's the first thing I do is I put his name in to see if he really was in Oklahoma. And then I pulled up his, and he always talked about how he lived in his mom's backyard, literally attached to her house. And I found Chris's house and it was on a military base in Oklahoma. So I brought that up to him on one of the calls. I'm like, would you be shocked if I told you I know what your address is? He's like, yeah, I'd be shocked. There's no way you would know, kind of thing. And I chatted to him what it was, and he kind of went off the handle. He was really pissed off, and he was in denial. He's like, well, you know, like a couple months later, he's like, you know, when I wasn't on the call, he was like, you know, Lawton, everyone is military in Lawton. It doesn't matter. The whole place is a military base. He was very taken back that I was able to find that. So I think that's the whole thing. Like I brought up the whole military thing. He was already janky about me knowing that he was on a military base. And I think that contributed to him flying off the handle on the last call that I did with him. If you listen to that call, and I haven't listened to it since, there's no reason for him to fly off the handle. Like it was an article. In fact, you listened to it, right?
Yeah.
Was that the same call where I talked about them faking the arrival ceremonies for military? Was that on the same call?
You're talking about the call for the electrocution thing.
I'm saying is on that call, did we also talk about how they faked, how NBC News admitted that the military fakes the arrival ceremonies of death?
Yes. You
same call.
That was, yeah, you had a whole war presentation, as I remember it. It was sort of, the electrocution thing, and then you led into the bit about the ceremonies,
Right. So the fact that he went crazy on me with something that was in the newspaper made no sense whatsoever. It was in the newspaper. It was in the news. It's not something that I just came up with the top of my head. I actually showed links of it being in the news. Yep.
So what I'm sort of surprised about is for communities like Fakeologist and Hoaxbusters, when something like this is announced, people don't seem to show any skepticism. And even though you've sort of pointed out that I should maybe be suspicious of Dave J, I do appreciate that he comes out of the woodwork and calls it for what it is, because it seemed like that was just going down a path of sympathy and not even raising an eyebrow about what we were being told. And now your article and some of the things you've told me tonight point out so many glaring problems with this story. That it seems illogical to think that someone passed away. And as Dave J says, I don't think we should false witness death. That sounds, I'm starting to really wake up now to how often that is done in everyday life, constantly. And people are living in a culture of death. It's really disturbing.
Oh, yeah. We live in a death cult. Mm. It's part of being in the cult. And is this where we can talk about cults and religions?
Yeah, go for it.
So that's, I forget, are you a religious or spiritual type?
I have even throughout my normie life, I've never really been into religion. I was your typical sort of left-wing evolutionary indoctrinated youngster. And since waking up to the wider conspiracy, I've become open to the idea that we haven't been that long and there is something outside this realm that put this realm here. That's the, like Zeitgeist would say, the thing that people have called God. I believe there's something going on because I subscribe to Sync as well. I think there's way too many weird so-called coincidences that happen in my life that indicate that there's something sending some funny jokes my way, and the fact that day to day my life is so comfortable and I never have any problems. It's like just the thought process of thinking my day will be good, nothing bad's going to happen, like it seems to come to fruition. I've never really had, I know you're famous for saying I've never had a bad day in my life, and I feel that way sometimes, like something's looking out for me, like this is, maybe people are NPCs and this is my video game, if that makes sense. So that would be the extent of my so-called religious belief, is like, say I wouldn't even class it as religion, because I think religion is saying you're in a cult, you're a human prescribed pattern of behavior.
So you don't pray all day long, you don't go to church every Sunday, you don't do any of the stuff that typical religious people do, right?
No.
Right. So that's the thing. By the way, the police just left. I figured out, I was thinking, how can I explain what just happened and to this person? I'll explain that on the next show. I figured out how I can explain it and protect her privacy. So, so you don't pray, you don't do all the typical cult, like, so then you would agree with me that a religion is a cult, right?
Definitely.
So then how is it that people who are looking for truth are religious? It makes absolute, I know I'm going to upset a lot of people who might be. I don't understand that connection. It makes no sense to me.
I think a lot of the values of truth are conflated with those of religion. Like, they're not all that different. It just came to mind the way Dave J said it, is the Christ Christ, and not meaning a physical Jesus man, the Christ is the light, the truth. You speak through Christ, you speak truth, you know, like just the essence of doing good in the world. And I think that that's something that we can all do, you know, without someone else telling us how to do it.
Wouldn't someone who's seeking truth say, well, how do we know Christ even existed?
Well, that's the point. I don't think it's a person that existed. Mm-hmm. Christ but is more of a concept. Do. Yeah, yeah, they do.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I'm so disconnected from the idea that people who are seeking the real truth about life are religious people, at least not questioning that.
So you're just speaking about the sort of Bible crowd of you're still talking about people in our realm, like the ACT realm of things that carry the Bible story everywhere they go.
And specifically who we just spoke about, which is Chris Kendall. We are now learning, and he put it on his website before his death. Did you see that on hoaxbusters.call or hoaxbusterscall.co?
I will look it up right now.
If you can, it takes forever to load. At least for me, it does. And I tried to help him with that. That was how I got back in touch with him. I tried to help him. And he made fun of me for that, too. I forgot about that. Okay. All these people trying to tell me how to speed up my site. They don't know what they're talking about. Okay.
Which article am I looking at?
So are you on the hoaxbusterscall.co website?
Yep.
Now it's still loading for me. So doesn't it say, isn't there like a Proverbs chapter saying at the top in the logo?
There's a Chris Kendall rest in peace post. There's just a list of posts.
So, but in the header of the, it's still loading for me. There was something about Proverbs, something, or it was some chapter verse of the Bible.
No, not that I can see.
So what I'm going to do now.
Wait a minute. No, I'll go straight to the homepage. It's just a list of posts. There's not too much to it.
So there's no header graphic?
No, just in text, Hoaxbusters call.
Oh, I think you're in the mobile version. That's why. If you do a desktop view.
Ah, now it's taking ages to load. There you go.
Yeah, and it looks like it's gone. It was there. It used to, instead of saying conspiracy or just theory, it was, yeah, he took it down. Someone took it down.
He probably took it down.
All right. But there was, in fact, if we go to archive.org, let me see if archive.org has a snapshot of that. Actually, I can go to Google. Google will have like the last month's snapshot. Let's see if they have it. Yep, cached. They have the mobile version. View web version. Here we go. Now it's going back live. And so now I have to go to archive.org and see if they do. .org. Anyway, it said it had a Bible chapter verse type of thing. And towards the end, when I was listening, when I was on the call with Chris, he was talking about being spiritual and stuff.
Mm. And is that something he'd always spoken about, or this is a more recent thing?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Right. So the biblical stuff ramped up prior to his death on Easter.
Right.
Mm.
Now, how can someone who's into truth be a religious person? I just don't understand it. Am I missing something? Maybe someone can explain it to me.
Yeah, but like, so the problem I have is like the Bible has clear passages for like Revelations 9:11 and 3:11. Like, whoever is designing this reality is mm-hmm. playing by some storybook that has the Bible there as well.
Yeah,
I think people of the religious persuasion have taken it far too literally that it's a physical person or anything, when really it's just another sort of publication of the script writers.
Mm-hmm.
But you would say his biblical references and that indicated that he was more of a literal sort of Christian.
No, all I'm saying is, I don't know how much clearer I can be. It's like, how can you be a truth seeker and be into religion at the same time? The two seem so polar opposite to me. It's insane. Am I missing something? I don't get it.
Yeah, but as a truth seeker, you might be skeptical of how old the Bible is or who wrote it. Whereas,
fine, then say that. Don't put Proverbs, some chapter and verse on your website. That's like, you know, it's like the guy who does custom decks or additions for your house and puts the religious verse on there. It's like, are you like, come on, like even my young son is like, that's ridiculous. He's just trying to cater to religious people. Like, he doesn't really believe that. Come on. I don't know. I know.
How old are your children now?
13 and 18.
Okay. Wow. Listening to all those archives, it was only 6 months ago I listened to all the archives, and you always had, you shared like personal family stories and stuff, and we were dealing with two youngsters, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and they're like super awake. One is very politically correct because he values having friends outside the truth realm, and I get that. But I'm also very upset that we cater to that. I'm on both sides of the fence.
Is this the older one?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that might just be sort of a coming of age thing, isn't it? I mean, I seem to remember when you were talking about them when they were younger, and I believe maybe that it was around the time maybe the eldest was 13 or something, and the younger one might have been, what would have that? Oh, either way, the younger one was more fascinated by the fact that you had an audience and a podcast and that, and the older one totally wanted nothing to do with it.
Yeah, my son, I had to kick him out today because he's not exactly quiet. He loves it. He is very proud of the fact that I do these calls, where my oldest is like hiding because he's worried what other people are going to think. And I get it. I get it. I totally get it. This is why, you know, I want to opt out of being in the normie life. I just want to totally opt out because I don't want to live like that.
It kind of forces you into this dual personality thing, you know.
Sure.
It's very easy to marginalize people like us because we have to present two different faces to the different people we care about.
Well, not for me. Now, the only time that that's actually not true. I stopped going to the local cafe and to getting my haircut because my findings and judgments and conclusions about life were getting back to my son's friends. Like, for example, vaccines. Right. So they were finding out that I am anti-vaccine. Now they're giving crap to my son who's going to high school that he's not part of the herd, you know, herd immunity, and that he's killing everyone. You see where that goes?
Yeah, the propaganda is really strong these days, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, yeah.
So I get it.
At one time, they're kids and you want to do the best for them, but at the same time, sometimes you just want to slap people. Like, what's this herd immunity bullshit? Like, you get a vaccine, but it's still not going to work?
Right.
Unless I get it? What are you
saying? But now with this coronavirus stuff, now that's all over. I no longer care. I just lost $150. I know it because a customer from the past, I saw this leasing kit, which is $300, and I get it for half price to people who've purchased it in the past. They want to get another car. And he's like, hey, are you still getting good deals in the coronavirus? Yeah. I said, he's like, how are you doing? That's how they always start off. They want to get a discount because they're already a member and their membership expired, and they always want a deal. So he's like, how you doing? And can I get a deal? So I wrote back, I'm doing great because this is bullshit. Right, that's what I wrote. This is bullshit and it's fake and I'm doing fantastic. And here's how to get 50% off. And I know that he probably thinks it's real, and that has offended him that I feel that way. And he's going to miss out on using my system to get a car at 25% less than he can doing it himself. So now I don't even care. Before I did care. I did care that my son went to high school and it could come back. Now I don't care. It's like, it's go time. We need to stop the bullshit and we need to we need to tell the truth. So I don't care anymore.
Yeah, you need to follow the light and share the message of Christ.
I'm not going into store and wearing a mask. I can tell you that. Yeah. And we're forced to do that. So I have my wife and get stuff. Because she's willing to do it. I'm not willing to do it.
We'll move on to our last segment in a moment. I'm stumbling all over my words. I've been up too long.
Drinking?
Sorry?
Are you drinking again?
No, don't start accusing me of that. You only put the idea in my head. It's a seed that will grow. We'll talk about Corona and your Project X coming up in the last segment. But for now, we're going to take a break. This is the Marcus Allen Show on Hoax Syndicate. Welcome back to the Marcus Allen Show on Hoax Syndicate. Just before we started recording, you sent me through a picture of your little home studio where you do the broadcast from. And you wanted to show me how your little man cave space has been converted into an educational facility. Can you tell me about that?
Well, because of coronavirus, now it's e-learning. My wife, who's a first grade school teacher, has to do it from home. In fact, I asked her this morning, I said, what happens if we didn't have high-speed internet? She didn't really have an answer, but where I live in the country, it's very unusual to have high-speed internet.
She's been hiding the side cutters from you, too.
What are side cutters?
Cutting pliers for electrical wires.
Oh,
maybe it's just an Australian joke then.
I didn't get that, but that's okay. So I'm like, you know, where we live, normally you get what's known as ADSL, which is using their phone lines, which is super slow and you can't do video. So anyway, punchline is my broadcasting studio, which I invented because I was going to do these calls every day with Chris Kendall, ironically, and I was going to pay him. I offered to pay to make a professional operation out of it, and no one wanted to do it, which was suspicious to me because Chris was always struggling for making money. So you would think he'd want to get paid for doing something he loved to do. So anyway, I sent you a picture of my studio, and you seem pretty interested in it. What can I tell you about it? It's very nimble, and it's awesome, and I'm going to, in Project X, which I know we're going to talk about in this segment, I'm going to make it so that anyone who's a member of Project X will be able to do a podcast or do a vlog or a YouTube video right from our facilities. That's part of the membership, and it'll be highly professional. Don't have to bring a single thing of equipment, and you'll leave. You can either do a live or you can, you know, walk away with a thumb drive and have everything ready to go. It's pretty cool.
Well, when you're building your own country or countries, you do need the media wing, right? And the type of people that are drawn to this realm are generally the more creative, outspoken type. So it makes sense to me to give people the tools and empower them to be able to make content.
Yeah, if you look at Disney World or Walt Disney, when he built Disneyland, his first theme park, the first thing he did after he acquired the land, do you know what the first thing he did was?
I have no idea.
He erected a metal, you know what transmission lines look like? They're like these metal things and then huge transmission lines go through them. It's like scaffolding that's like a triangle, like a pyramid. We have them all over the place here in the States.
Like power lines? What are we talking about?
Yeah, it's like the scaffolding that holds the power lines up, you know, like 600 feet.
It's like the background of my website.
Oh, let's take a look. Hoax of hoaxsyndicate.com. Let's say hoaxsyndicate.com. Exactly that. That's exactly what it looks like.
That's what I was going for is the radio network. So I use it's got the Illuminati triangle there with the fog, because you're finding your way through the fog. You've got a tunneling effect through the tower, and it's also a radio tower. So, you know, it's four meanings.
That's excellent. That was a good segue to that. Very good. So that's what Walt Disney built. The first thing he built on the land was this tower. And then what he did is he put up a time-lapse cameras on all sides of this tower. And that's what he did is he would show people how Disneyland was being built, and he would use that with the press, et cetera, et cetera. The first thing that governments do when they go to war and they take over is they take over the distribution of the propaganda. So that's the first thing that I'm going to do with Project X is make it easy for people to know about Project X, leveraging other vloggers and podcasters, inviting them to be a member and come on down and podcast from our location and have a whole team of people to get the word out. So yeah, I'm big into that. That's the first thing that we're going to build is scaffolding just like this and the time lapse. And once everything is built, we will cater to the media. And this isn't like, you know, if you go to on the cult side of things like Scientology, oh my God, I went down the Scientology rabbit hole this week. Oh, have you looked into Scientology?
I've seen a few documentaries on it.
Oh my goodness. There's one called Clear, Going Clear. I'll put a link to that.
Yeah, that's that actress, Lisa Remini, isn't it?
No, well, she was in it. She wasn't in this one. This was a book called Going Clear that they turned into a documentary.
Right, okay.
And it was very good. It was 2 hours. If you're stuck inside, it's a good one to watch. Oh my goodness, Scientology is so evil. Now,
Louis Theroux documentary. I think it was just called My Scientology Documentary. And mm-hmm. They did it by having, they went to Hollywood and hired, you know, unknown actors to play or dramatize all the things that the insiders were giving information about. So you had people that had exited Scientology telling the stories, and then they had all these actors. Because, see, the whole thing with Scientology is it's tied into the entertainment industry. So right. I think they thought it was clever by having these actors or wannabe actors come and play all the parts and act out all these scenes. It was quite clever. But, yeah, when you talk about media control, they've got quite a serious media wing on that thing, haven't they?
Actually, it's more the cops. And by the way, Going Clear, they didn't hire actors. It's similar to what you're talking about. They actually got the people who were on the other side. They got the people who were running the church, the security of the church, the head honchos of the church. They've all flipped, and now they are anti-church. So they were all featured in this documentary. Fascinating documentary. We're watching it, and when we eat dinner at the table, we've got YouTube videos open. That's, you know, we don't talk about stupid stuff. We educate ourselves. So we're now on like segment 3 because you can only watch so much of it at dinner time. So we're watching the final third of this Going Clear, and it's excellent. Can't recommend it enough. So anyway, yeah, Scientology, you just have to watch this documentary. It's crazy that even one person would be a Scientologist after watching this. It's that bad. But there are people who will believe anything to have a better life, and I get it. There's a lot of desperate people out there.
And you brought this up in relation to Project X because of the media? Right.
No, I brought it up because I am one of the... Here's the thing. When you have... What we're going to do with Project X, if you haven't heard it before, is I'm making this sort of country within a country. There's a little tiny country within a country, and they'll be dotted throughout the world. And you'll be able to hop to each one as a member without wearing a mask, without being scared. It's like the way things used to be. My concern is that people are going to say that I'm a cult. So that's why I found out about Scientology, because I'm searching through all this stuff. How do I prove to people that I'm the opposite of a cult? And that's when I stumbled upon Scientology again. So, that's how I went there with Going Clear in Scientology. The big thing with cults is that you literally cannot have a mind of your own. And I'm quite the opposite. If you've ever heard, in fact, we talked about it today. I always say, I don't give advice. You can copy my advice. You can take parts of my advice and do your own thing. And if you never want to listen to me again, fine. That's your choice. With a cult, you don't have a choice. Once you're in, you never get to leave, which is Interesting. My wife even brought that up. They're like, my wife was like, why would they force someone to stay if they don't want to be there? And do you know the, I don't have a good answer for that. Do you?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'd be answering the question you're asking. I mean, isn't every leader just looking to run their own little section of the world to have people under their control through whatever, you know, problems they had in their past? They seek that control?
Sure, but if someone finds out that it's a scam, why would you want that person on campus? Because a lot of Scientologists live on campus. They never leave. They're paid 50 cents an hour to do really hard work. Why would you want a dissenter on campus? If anything, I'd want them out. And then I would just say that they're crazy. If someone says, I was on the inside for 30 years and what he does, I would just say that person's just, you know, jaded. That's all I would say. Why would you force them to stay? Like right now, there's David Miscavige. That's the person who leads the cult right now, Scientology.
David Miscavige was one of the key players in Louis Theroux's documentary. They were retelling all the stories of his misdoings.
Yeah. So he had a wife, and she's been missing for 13 years. Just been missing.
She might have already ascended to planet Xenu or whatever the fuck. How do you know?
Right, right. Level 8, right? OT8, they call it.
Yeah.
So I don't understand that about a cult. Why would you want a dissenter within your ranks? Why not just say goodbye?
So you come at it more like from the perspective of a businessman or an entrepreneur, that you would not give advice. You would rather have a diversity in ideas and use that.
Yeah. Well, I have over 1,000 hours of these talks that we're having right now. I've had with Chris Kendall. I've had with others that people who are members of Project X get to hear. And I don't ever recall, I could have maybe very early on saying, you should do this. That's why I asked you during this call, like, I don't tell you you should stop drinking. It's like, it's your choice. I talk about what I do. I don't drink because I'm never the same after I drink. I'm like, I can't even function. The same with coffee. I can't function when I'm, you know, when there's blood coming out of my butt when I'm trying to go to the bathroom. I'm not telling you not to do it. It may seem that I'm encouraging it, and I am, but I'm not forcing you to do it. But when it comes to cults, no, you must do this. And if you don't do it, then you get in trouble. But I know, I mean, I'm like, one thing about business that you know is you always want to quash the objections that you think are going to come up. And I know people are going to say, yeah, Marcus says this isn't a cult, but it's really a cult. No, it's not. You can visit Project X as a guest, or you can be on campus the rest of your life and live on there. And you can leave anytime you want. That's okay. Bye. A cult leader would never allow for that.
The type of people you would attract would probably see no reason to want to leave anyway, though.
Well, right. So I got to do something really, really, really good. But that's the thing with cults is it seems like they're doing something really, really, really good. One of the things I was explaining about Scientology, which is just off the wall, batshit crazy, is that it is... You ever hear the expression snitches get stitches?
Yeah, and I was actually going to bring up snitches with Corona conversation. So we'll move on to that in a minute. But yeah, I'm familiar with the expression prison term, isn't it?
Is it? Oh, yeah, I think it is. Well, that's what Scientology is not about. Snitches get rewarded, so they think. So what happens is it is your duty and obligation to snitch on your friends if they do something wrong. And if you do not snitch, then you get in trouble. It's kind of like here in the States, if you witness a car accident, you can't just keep moving on. You have to stay and be a witness to the car accident, no matter what. In Scientology, if you find out that your best friend who's in Scientology went off the wagon, you're not allowed to drink. If they had a drink and you don't report that they had a drink, now you get in trouble for not reporting that they'd have a drink. They keep complete dossiers on every single thing you do, quote unquote, bad on record. And they use that as blackmail 30 years in the future. Apparently, that's what they do with John Travolta. John Travolta wanted to leave the church. Next thing you know, and you can go to the Inquirer magazine and see it, they listed all the things that he confessed to, because that's what Scientology is. It's just one confession after another. It's confession all day long with this e-meter. It's kind of like a lie detector test. So they have all this dirt on you, and they use it against you if you even think about dissenting, if you even think about saying anything bad about the religion. It's just really unbelievable. I cannot recommend this going clear more. It's awesome.
I'll check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're going to talk about coronavirus.
It's self-policing, isn't it? It's
yes.
a rule by fear, and you need less middle management when everyone's reporting on themselves.
And now I know why you're going to talk about coronavirus, because that's what we have right now. They are literally, in some states, broadcasting on TV that you will be rewarded for snitching on your neighbors if they don't follow the rules.
Well, that's why I brought it up. I did want to get in. We haven't got a whole lot of time, but I did want to just talk a bit about corona. And one thing I just thought of too, while you were talking about the internet speed and how your wife can do her job from home. It's interesting, here in Australia, we've been in the middle of this rollout of a new national broadband network. And it's interesting that the whole thing, like the final pieces of the puzzle that everyone now finally has it, only started to happen around the time coronavirus started. Like, yep. I mean, the last few people that I know who didn't have it finally got it just weeks before March 11. So it almost seems like, you know, that was a well-planned thing to have. The availability of fast internet at home right at a time when people would be either sitting at home watching Netflix or having to work from home, you know?
Oh, yeah. I've talked about this numerous times. There are schools. There are one YouTube after Twitter, YouTube video after another showing that they're installing 5G in the schools while we're at home. And I know the reason they're doing that is because people are trying to burn down 5G towers. They think it's dangerous. Now, I don't think it's dangerous. Not the way that we're being told. Dangerous. And
why don't you think it's dangerous?
Well, if anyone would know, it'd be you. I mean, that's your thing. Do you think it's dangerous?
Well, yeah, I've flip-flopped a lot on this. See, here's one thing I found interesting. John Le Bon has done a lot of work on ultrasound and radiation. Mm-hmm. And it's only just really occurred to me recently that when we're talking about ultrasound, we're talking about sound waves, which are vibrations in the air, right? Like when I talk, my vocal cords vibrate the air, and the vibration is passed through a medium of, oxygen particles or whatever, you know, the oxygen, nitrogen, whatever the air is made up of. You've got vibration passing through that at a frequency that's audible, right? Between like 20 hertz and 20 kilohertz. Now, ultrasound is using the same technology. It's higher frequency, so it's outside the human hearing range, but it's still a vibration of a medium. So when they put the, what do they call the thing they do the ultrasound with? Whatever that, you know, the wand thing that they actually put on on the woman's stomach, right?
Yes.
Now, that thing, that's just vibrating at a very high frequency, but it's actually physical vibration of the medium. And it hadn't occurred to me, even with all my engineering background in radio technology, when we're talking about 5G or radio transmission, we're not talking about vibrations in the medium. These things can supposedly still travel through a vacuum. We're talking about transverse waves, not vibrational waves. So I'm starting to think maybe all this Wi-Fi and 5G and radio transmission is all fear porn. Like, I think you've got so much of the population scared about viruses when they don't even realize you can't catch viruses. There's no viruses going around. But going to be a certain part of the population that don't fall for it, the conspiracy-minded folk. But what can we push on them that will get them worried? 5G.
5G.
So you've got this instant secondary fear tactic for the large majority of, MAGAs and all the people out there that are skeptical of corona, even in a mainstream sense, skeptical of corona. They've got this whole 5G narrative to go along with it. And the more I'm thinking about the technology, I think just because We know ultrasound radiation, which is sound waves through a medium, can be dangerous to a fetus or to living tissue. I don't think this radio technology that is electromagnetic really does do us any harm. So I'm not so worried about 5G towers anymore.
Have you heard Chris and I talk about vegetation and electrical transmission lines?
No.
Okay, so if anyone's going to know the answer to this, it's I'm counting on you. So we always discuss, you know, my wife will not, we want to build a retirement home. And I'm like, well, you know, if we do it right next to power lines, we'll get the land really cheap because no one wants to live near power lines because they're scared. And I'm not so sure there's anything to be scared of. You've got the inverse square law, et cetera, et cetera. And then Chris is like, and this is Chris's idea, it's brilliant. He's like, well, I look at vegetation, like the canary in the coal mine. Is the vegetation different underneath the power line than elsewhere? Well, and the answer is no.
Yeah, it's living cells just the same as a human in that sense. And like most of the transmitter sites I've visited, they're usually located out in bush areas, you know, like up mountains and places like that. And they're not discernibly different from the land around them. They're, you know, they're never, because of real estate, I'm assuming, they're never placed smack bang in the middle. They find, you know, most capital city transmitters are located up the nearest mountain adjacent to the city. And yeah, I can't say I've seen any difference in vegetation.
So now that gets into radiation, that radiation is bad for you. Okay, there's a guy, I should look this up too.
So what we're saying is radiating just means to send something out. So like ultrasonic radiation that is sound, even if it's too high to hear, is still causing a disturbance in a medium, whereas what we're talking about is electromagnetic. So the field generated from electrical wires is electromagnetic. It's not physically pushing on the medium around it.
Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the layman and 5G, they're like, oh, radiation. So then again, I go with the common sense, and I'm the one who brought this up. I remember reading in a newspaper where a guy held the world's record for the amount of airplane flights he took. Right? So we're told that the closer you are to the sun, the more radiation. I said to myself, are airline pilots
I remember this bit, how why aren't airline pilots leading the world in all the occurrences of cancers?
And they're not.
Hmm.
Right? So it's like, see, this is to me what finding the truth is all about, is to use critical thinking skills and say, let's just step back a little bit and say, let's just make this simple, you know. We're seeing the vegetation's the same. Airplane pilots aren't dropping out of the sky with cancer. World record holders aren't, you know, they look fantastic. They're living in their 80s and 90s. What's really going on here?
Mm. But radiation's such a loaded, like that word just summons fear, doesn't it? Because of like nuclear radiation. And we've had that whole nuclear myth for so long that no wonder people are scared of radiation. You summon images of whole towns being burnt to the ground. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like you should be scared of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I'm not afraid of it. What I am concerned about is here's the thing. Here in the States, school ends about a month from now. Why wouldn't they just wait a month when everyone is off for school for 3.5 months to install 5Gs in school? Why would they get the conspiracy crowd going, rushing to schools, seeing unmarked cars, and when asking, they're admitting that they're installing 5G? I was on my walk 2 days ago. I posted about this. And I said to the guy, I said, why are you blocking traffic and why are you up in the air on the power lines? Oh, we're installing fiber optics. And I silence is golden. I didn't say anything. He goes, you know, 4G and 5G. I'm like, thank you very much. I said, who do you work for? Oh, it's crowncastle.com. And sure enough, when you type in, let me put Crown Castle in the notes. When you type in crowncastle.com, let's all do that together, shall we? It's one of the world's largest providers of infrastructure for 5G. Like worldwide.
Yeah. And the crown's right in the title there, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, look, I'm sort of... what was I going to say? I forget what I was even going to say. I started paying attention to how I was going to wrap up. It had something to do with a point you were just making, and I've completely lost it.
You know, I'm not afraid of 5G. Hmm. I'm just like, why would they...
Why is the timing that this is being rolled out while everyone's in their houses? Why does there need to be a cross point there between the two?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's up in the air.
And I think I said this before on the last show we did, is that they're desperate. Too many people know what's going on. This was not supposed, no futurist had ever predicted 2020 that this would happen. They all mentioned 2025 and 2030. And they're rolling this out much faster. And when you rush into something, it doesn't matter how many think tanks and NGOs you have, I don't think it's going to go as planned. There are way too many people who are awake right now. If you go to YouTube comments, Twitter comments, oh my goodness, it is. Even my wife is admitting that a lot of people are awake. She never thought she'd see the day. So many people are screaming about this stuff. So the punchline is, I'm pretty excited about what's going on right now. I know a lot of people aren't, but.
A lot of it can be plan, divide, and conquer, though. I think there's a lot of sort of friction in a lot of these comments you're talking about. One thing I just wanted to do before we wrap up, too, is I am a subscriber of Tim Osman, and he puts out this on his Patreon. There's like a top 13 headlines thing that you can follow. Mm. And he had a brilliant article. There's someone's request. You know how like when people make complaints to the local government?
Yeah.
You know, like, so people have been encouraged to snitch on things that go against the whole self-isolation and social distancing and that. So someone's requested one of the government's release or local councils, whatever it is, release their for freedom of information. They can get hold of all the emails people have sent in. So he's published this whole 900 email list of all these people making complaints. And he just reviewed it in one of his most recent videos. I encourage anyone to check it out because just the way he goes over some of them and sort of calls them out by name and goes like, yes, that's the appropriate thing to do, Sally Hansen. You know, like snitch on your daughter. That's a good idea. Snitch on her. Some funny shit. But
how would we get a link to that Tim Osman YouTube video?
Yeah, it's on his Infinite Plane Radio YouTube page. He does daily videos, but it's recapped in a couple of them. He shows you the emails, but I'll send you through some links so you can add them to your show notes.
Okay, great. Yeah, I see. TimOsman.myshopify.com.
Don't get me started on his marketing strategy. The guy is awesome at what he does, but he is about being on every platform. So. I'm a big advocate of sort of having one centralized place to manage everything from. Not that you can't have Twitter and Facebook and have all these platforms, but he seems to just be shut down on them so often he just starts up new ones, and he's a big buyer of domain names. He has so many domain names. So you're forever finding it difficult to follow Infinite Plane Media, Infinite Plane Radio, Tim Osman. He goes by so many different names. There's so many domains, so many platforms, and, you know, he gets deplatformed on YouTube, so he starts up another one under a different name, and it's like you're forever sort of chasing your tail trying to find the content, which can be a bit frustrating.
Yeah, and I know you want to wrap this up. I'll just say this to final it out. People who peddle the truth are not thinking about it in a smart way. They're putting out things that they know are going to get banned, and then they keep repeating the same mistake. Why not put out politically correct stuff, attract people to behind a paywall or be in a private site of some sort, and then do that hard-hitting stuff that won't get banned. London Real, Brian Rose, has been deplatformed on everything, and he never put out anything that was really... he had a David Icke interview that got him deplatformed off everything. And now he just created his own Alex Jones-style network. He has his own, and he just raised $750,000 in 4 days. $750,000 to create his own network where he doesn't have to worry about being banned. We can talk about that next time.
Yeah, that's something I'd like to get into. I'll get Chris Kendall's sister to whip me up a donation thing.
I would hit her up, man. She knows what she's doing.
Even this, I've got to say, since I started paying for it, I the email he sends out daily from Patreon with the current things he's working on where you can easily link to stuff is a bit more useful. But even subscribing, I could do it through about three different donation platforms. So then you become worried, like, well, I'm getting the one from Patreon, but is he putting other shit on the one somewhere else? You know, like, it just becomes sort of frustrating not knowing. Like, I'd rather a content producer that just has all the stuff in one place. Here's everything I'm doing. Go for your life. That's.
It sounds like he's listening to Gary Vaynerchuk.
Well, it's just like be everywhere, you know, because people listen everywhere. You've got to be everywhere. But without a unified place to link to it all, it becomes frustrating.
I agree with that, yeah.
Anyway, that wraps up another episode of the Marcus Allen Show on Hoax Syndicate. We'll be back soon enough. I'll keep our listeners posted of when we'll be doing our next show. It's been very good talking to you, Marcus.
Same here, man. I really appreciate it, Joel. Have a good night.
You too, mate. See ya.